Welcome to the Loosehead Podcast.
To accomplish great things, we must not only act, but also dream. Not only plan, but also believe.
In a way, we want you to fail because we know you're pushing yourself to a new level.
I've rarely seen capability compensate for a lack of character or a lack of capacity.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Loosehead Podcast. This Tackling the World series is based on the challenges of the Rugby World Cup, covering a wide range of topics such as the selection process, the build-up, the games, memories, challenges, mental health, and the aftermath. This series is sponsored by Sound Out Rhythm, a company that provides tuition and events across all drum and percussion instruments, led by professional drummer and performer Connor Moore. Four different players will join me to discuss their experience and memories on this series, and today I'm delighted to be joined by former Springbok and 2007 World Cup winner, BJ Botha. So, BJ, how are you getting on?
Yeah, Jeff, all good, man. Goodness me, we obviously homeschooling and, you know, busy enough with the kids and, you know, finding a way to keep active in the kind of lockdown, you know, as we are. But I think everyone's in the same boat. And yeah, I suppose just to keep the head above water in all sense, you know, and hopefully the lights are coming at the end of the tunnel soon enough. But we're all keeping well in relative to kind of what's happening, you know.
Yeah, I think you said it, you nailed it there. Kind of the end is in sight, and we can just kind of keep that focus, I suppose, you know, that there is light at the end of the tunnel, and we'll be back at games and back having a few pints together soon enough, you know.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think I've been speaking to a few guys and past players, current players, you know, and I think as humans, what we hold on to is that kind of hope aspect and the definitive end date, I suppose, we can work towards. And I think that's been the most trickiest part about everything, you know, whether it be you coaching, whether it be playing, uncertainty of games taking place on a weekend and kind of the certain stages you need to kind of touch on before you're playing the game or coaching or what might be in the business realm. I think it's kind of the tricky part has been the definitive date changing all the time, and you know, whether it be the vaccine arriving, whether it be numbers going up, and you know, all this sort of stuff. And I think that's been the toughest part about this all, you know. And so now hopefully we see that light becoming brighter, so yeah, let's hope it continues.
Just before we jump into today's topic, I know you're coaching with Bows and stuff. How are you keeping busy from a coaching sense, and how are you still connecting with the players on a regular basis and that?
Very much so. You know, I think Carl Sheridan, you know, being our director of rugby, has been very kind of proactive with that right from the beginning, you know. And we have kind of, you know, taken upon ourselves to kind of open up, even from the first kind of lockdown, you know, open up a WhatsApp group, keep the guys, you know, kind of active as much as can be, you know, sending out some training programs and keeping it fun at times. You know, I think the guys are also challenged by many things at the same time. So keeping it fun, running a bit of, you know, competitive games that we can do, you know, within their own areas and while they are kind of on their own. So yeah, it's been and then kind of back in training, and then you kind of follow that up again when it opened up, and now lockdown again. So yeah, it's been really, I suppose, challenging, but in one sense we've definitely managed to keep that contact, which I think has been incredibly important. You know, I think the announcement now that we're not going to probably go back to the AIL, and there might be the Community Cup kind of thing. So we're just kind of keeping that light burning, you know, that candle burning almost, that we're going to hopefully get back to training, and there might be some games coming up in the kind of Community Cup. But yeah, it's been challenging, I suppose, for everyone. But yeah, I think the important part is to keep that human engagement, I suppose, seeing how the guys are doing first and foremost, not being kind of, you know, massive load of information and what needs to be done specifically, but just keeping the guys turning over, you know, daily and having that kind of, I suppose, interaction with them, which has been, you know, very, very valuable for us and for the players.
I think it's just as important to have that social aspect, like you said, too. Like, I mean, for some guys, it might be the only thing they have, you know, and suddenly they don't have it anymore. But just to have that WhatsApp group to show that people are there if they want to have a chat, or to, you know, like you said, just have a few fun games or whatever it is, you know, just to keep them ticking over and to keep, I suppose, the mental health in check, too, you know. But I asked you on today because I wanted to chat to you about the 2007 World Cup. And if you're happy enough, I'll just jump straight in.
Yeah, of course, go for it.
I wanted to begin exactly. Kind of before the competition and looking at kind of the build-up and the preparation and everything. For you especially, I mean, you made your debut for the Springboks in 2006. And then you fast forward maybe, 14, 16 months later, and you're a World Cup winner. Looking at that time period in its own, kind of away from, let's say, the aftermath of the World Cup and everything, how much of a whirlwind was that for you as a player?
Yeah, it was kind of a, I suppose, as you say, you know, 16th month went past very quickly. And I think first and foremost, very proud, you know, to kind of first make my debut. But I suppose there's something special making your debut against the All Blacks as a Springbok. And especially, even though we did get kind of, I suppose, a hammering the day, we kind of, it was definitely sweeter the week after when we beat them in Rustenburg. And kind of put their winning, I think it was, they were going for the world record with the winning streaks in a row. I think it was 17 going on 18, and we kind of put a stop to that. So it was very sweet, and I suppose felt that kind of feeling of beating the All Blacks for myself anyway, the first time, my second game. And yeah, I suppose taking it back where the team had come from, especially under Jake White, you know, understanding that the players that kind of were in that 2006 squad leading and building up to the World Cup in 2007, some of them weren't around, but they were all part of that kind of movement, you know. And then obviously players added on the way, you know, from an age group perspective, performance, inform, all that sort of stuff, you know. So we had a large kind of Sharks contingent and Bulls contingent to that. I suppose that was, you know, to our kind of, I suppose, large parts of the Bulls and the Sharks doing well added to that Springbok, you know, performances. And that kind of came to be in our 2007 kind of final, you know, that that unfortunately for the Sharks and my, you know, being on the field and them taking us in the last couple of seconds of the game with Brian scoring that try. So that rivalry really pushed that even further, I think, and being part of that, you know, South African setup. But I suppose when I look back now and knowing where Jake, when he started in 2003, building up the squad, you know, and actually having the vision, I think was the biggest part of everything, you know. Everything we did was this vision of 2007, you know. Whether it was a win, wherever it might be, you know, they had the vision of, listen, next time, when in 2007, the exact date, we're going to have something in the middle of the change room here that's going to be really special, you know. And as I said, guys came and gone, players especially, and the guys stood by that, you know. And I suppose leading up to 2006, if you look at it, some of our results, teams we played first and foremost, and some of our results, you know, going into 2007, you know, weren't the best at all. You know, you would think, how convincing were those wins, you know? But I think it was the stepping stones towards where we knew where we had to be performing. So we knew that we wouldn't put aside our performance. Every performance and every time you took the field as a Springbok, you held yourself to the highest level, to needed to perform, you know. But we came across teams where, as I said, even just example, an Irish team in 2006, you know, we came across them and they beat us in Ireland, but that was just part of it. And I suppose we learned from that and moved on, you know, games against the end of year, against a double against England. First game, I remember clearly, we definitely, you know, lost it, I feel, ourselves. And look, credit to England, they won it. And obviously we won them the week after. But all these little stepping stones added to that kind of momentum we try to create within, mostly within the squad, the culture, you know, the different players, how we'd kind of, I suppose, gel as a team, you know, because again, we knew what was going to be asked, you know, of us as at the World Cup was going to be testing our whole squad, you know, as we've seen 2019, how the box used, you know, every one of their players. And we look at the bomb squad and all these kind of interactions they talk about, and I don't want to talk about that too much, but I suppose it shows, you know, how important that squad is and that positivity around the players that aren't selected possibly, you know, and that adds fuel to that fire. So I suppose that was, and again, I suppose will win for me as well, because in 2006, I got some bad news about a neck injury. So I actually was about to make my debut, I think, and kind of got bad news coming off the Super Rugby platform with the Sharks, and needed to go for kind of surgery, and you know, you're 26 years old, then you think, you know, you're just starting. And I got some bad news about my neck, and you know, thought, what now? So that was another platform that I had to get over, you know, and how to get that confidence side of things, because again, using your neck in rugby is probably, you know, the most important part, especially in the front row for anyone. And it was getting that confidence side back again. You know, so for myself personally as well, that was something I had to, you know, get over, and thankfully I did.
You mentioned there that beating New Zealand in your second game was huge, but I imagine building up towards a World Cup, to beat New Zealand so early in your career, that must have been excellent from a personal point of view in regards giving you the confidence to go out and play the way you want to play.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, I felt first and foremost the game the week before. I remember clearly Roko Thoko, how devastating it was that game in Loftus, you know, and how when we gave them the space and the kind of the ball they had, how devastating they can be. And we knew, you know, as again, the side that All Black side was, you know, as we knew and building up to even their 2007 World Cup campaign, really class as ever as a World Cup, as All Black side is, you know. So they tested us to the end. The week after, you know, we only won it in the end with Andre Pretorius kicking over 3 points. But we were in there. It was a battle of everything, and one of my toughest games ever, being part of, and especially playing in a desolate place like Rustenburg. You know, it was really a hard ground, and really a place, you know, that there weren't 60,000-70,000, you know, South African supporters shouting down their throats. So it brought out the best in us, you know, and I suppose that led me on the road of, again, appreciating this opportunity to play against the All Blacks as a Springbok. You know, you have, I think, as a Springbok myself, I've always seen that, you know, that would have said that, of course, first and foremost, I would like to become a Springbok and dream of that. But again, part of that is playing as your biggest rivals, the All Blacks. So I was very fortunate enough to kind of, you know, play that and win in my second game and carry that through, you know, my career. And I suppose it's, you then have to then reflect and again, different opposition ask different questions, you know, as we soon found out against the Northern Hemisphere sides later on in the year. And then some of the incoming tours that we played, in 2007, you know, even a provincial side like Connacht, playing against them, you know, in one of our last games before the 2007 World Cup campaign started.
Looking at that build-up, I know you said from 2003 when Jake White joined that he was looking towards 2007 through that whole time. But I know you said losing games, you learn from them, you move on. But the expectations or the pressure coming from the fans must have been overwhelming, especially in a country like South Africa where, you know, anyone who's interested in rugby, it's almost a religion.
Yeah, there's no doubt, you know, and you feel that expectation. I think that's what you drive on as well. You know, you definitely feel that expectation. It's part of the, you know, DNA. And we definitely felt it in person after the loss in Pretoria. I won't lie to you. From long after that, and we could hear the supporters, you know, obviously, you know, almost, you know, baying for blood, I suppose, you know, and we put that expectation on our shoulders. There's no doubt about that, you know, the kind of best in the country had played, and there's expectation to win, especially in your own country. But you know, I think you especially being the squad we were, you know, we understood the long-term factors there and how we'd build and become a little bit closer as a side with every kind of, I suppose, game. And the result then either way, I suppose, would also play a big part. You know, we knew that we had to keep our feet on the ground much more, you know, and gel that side. And I suppose that belief, knowing that belief within ourselves that this is part of the puzzle, you know, this is going to be part of the puzzle that hopefully overflows into that 2007, you know, World Cup campaign.
Was it difficult to keep the faith in the process amongst all the kind of baying for blood or in the media or expectations of the fans?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, it's always in you know, you look in the history of South African rugby, you know, I suppose they look back and now, and I've actually just finished reading again Gary Tashman's book, and I was reading James Dalton's book, and you know, that trend continues, you know, how the results are just a bad run of results just equals next coach in, you know, yeah, we go. And which players need to be kind of worked out and where we go from there. So definitely expectation on that. And I think where Jake, you know, found his way, you know, he had a plan in place, and it was definitely, there were definitely tricky times. You know, there were times for sure that he was standing there, and I'm sure, you know, as he always felt a pressure as a Springbok coach and felt, well, where are we going now? You know, some of the results not going our way, and we knew we needed to keep that core group going forward no matter what. And that was going to pay off. We didn't know, but we definitely were tested in many ways off the field as well. I suppose looking back at the results, you know, going especially end of the year, you know, we basically less than, 10 months out, 11 months out, you know, from the World Cup, and, you know, losing against Ireland, but no disrespect, I suppose, to Ireland, but a game that we definitely our country, you know, said, would have said, there's no doubt you should win against England, an English side that we kind of found, you know, our form in the following year to beat well. But again, those added to those challenges and learning aspects, you know, about looking next year and working with different combinations. You know, what also played in our favor was leading up to kind of the World Cup. And I know this is the following year, we'll probably speak about it, but how the players within the squad, you know, kind of understood those sacrifices we kind of had to make for each other, kind of off the field. And not only that, but understand that our performance was really going to be squad orientated, kind of jumping the gun now, you know, our plans for the Tri Nations. You know, we left half the squad in Cape Town at a training camp, and we worked with some of the specialists there, and then sent half the squad on the Tri Nations, you know. And it wasn't that we were sending a weaker side. We had some unbelievable players and a core strength of our Springbok, you know, squad part of that. But that was the plan, to kind of go and a knock-on effect towards where the goal was, which was the 2007 World Cup. As I said, I must be very careful that there's no doubt we were just throwing the Tri Nations away. It was part of the puzzle that we would by any means would want to win every test and any trophy. But we did have that kind of, I suppose, a precipice that we know we were climbing slowly but surely. And then that was part of that.
That kind of reflects to me what Razzy Erasmus did in 2019 before the World Cup, when half the squad went on to play one game and the next one looked forward to the other. And to me, I don't think it's throwing away a competition. I think it's a sense of testing your depth, testing your squad to see, okay, yeah, we're going to have to maybe make changes or cut it down, but we need to see how guys handle this, I suppose, confrontation or this kind of responsibility of having to lead a team despite maybe a lack of experience.
Yes, and there's no doubt, exactly. And I think it creates that environment, as you just put there, you know, that we have to test those combinations because we know we're going to have to use them. We're going to have to use them in some form or the other. We can't go through, and your vision is definitely not arrogantly, but we know that we want to get to the final. And so what it takes to get to the final, what you need to do in your pool game to get, you know, which team you might consider playing, and what you need to have in your armory as such in the kind of playoffs, you know. So there's no doubt that tests the combinations, and you're going to have to go there. And also the other factor is obviously having the guys on all cylinders come Rugby World Cup time. So especially in how you work your minutes played per player, and working around that side of thing, and then adding to that not every player was then in our time anyway, secure of a place to go to the World Cup. You know, these guys are still playing for places. So they knew again as an individual what they needed to do going away and have an opportunity to put up their hand to be part of the squad. And we had a great relationship. I remember us even you know, kind of we were together all the time and obviously watching the tests and stuff, but you know, during the week building up, the guys were chatting to the guys in South Africa. You know, the Johan Miller was captaining that tour, great friend of mine, and we played many years together, you know, was talking to the guys up in we were in Cape Town, and we were in contact, you know, in close contact with them all the time, obviously celebrating, and in the other sense, just kind of obviously looking at the game, how can we get better? And so that connection was there all the time, you know? So even though we were kind of a group that we were trained before and we were part of tests, we were as tight as ever, and knowing again, you know, where we were going.
You mentioned the word sacrifice, and that's something I just want to touch on quickly. How long before the tournament were you thinking what I do now will impact us getting to the final, be it maybe getting enough sleep, be it nutrition, be it doing little extras in training?
You know, funny you asked that. We actually had a mantra, to be honest. We had a mantra, and I can't actually remember the number, but I think it was 47. So we actually made those rubber bands, you know, came about Henning Gericke, who was our psychologist, and, you know, also Barley Swat, which is our scrum coach. And they came together, you know, and actually formed these bracelets that we had. And it actually said the simple words, believe 47. And that was the 47 people of the squad that was going to the World Cup. Now, prior to that, there was a lot of talking about how we will do that, and the discussions were happening. How do we put this into simple terms that we know, as you said, now you kind of go to the pool, you're thinking twice about pool recovery, or you're thinking twice about your nutrition, or you're thinking twice about doing extras. Believe 47. And that was the whole thing about how do you put yourself in a better place so you don't let the 47 down. So you're going to believe that at 47, we can do this together, you know. I suppose that was one of the things that really stood by us, and knowing that, again, below that main heading, you know, that everything we did, everything we sacrificed during that time was for the 47 kind of physios, strength and conditioning staff, all that, you know, leading into the World Cup.
All the prep, all the sacrifices, the squad is named, you're in it. How are you feeling?
Yeah, ecstatic. I mean, I suppose you have an idea, kind of obviously being there and being in the place, you know, that you would have got the phone call. But, you know, for me, it was just that again, I suppose, you know, green light to kind of, you know, represent your country and being fit and ready. You know, to be on the biggest stage in rugby, you know, and again, that's really a great privilege because there's many great players, incredible players around the world that have passed those times, got injured, haven't been in form, for instance, for whatever reason, for injuries, or just out of favor with a certain coach. So, yeah, it was everything coming together, and again, until that time, you don't go to the place where you're thinking about possibly getting injured prior to World Cup, because I think this doesn't work in your favor. And I think, you know, again, it does go through your mind, because again, it's such a obviously physical you know, part of the game that you can pick up a niggle and you might just take a backward step and fall out of favor, or maybe not play again leading up, and your mind's racing. But to get that green light and to kind of finally get that blazer and, you know, everything. But you still don't feel it's that surreal part until you, you know, touch down in Paris and everything starts then, you know. And we were, you know, we had a huge warm welcome and we landed that side, and it was then great to just get started, you know.
I'd like to talk to you about the competition before we actually jump in about the rugby, and maybe, you know, how you found the competition and spending the time there. So I was reading an interview earlier, and you know, it said that you went on day trips, and the day after a game, you know, you're having dinner with your wife and stuff. That those little things must have made such a difference in comparison to maybe, you know, a coach saying it has to be a pure team environment and you can't see wives or girlfriends or something. Like, I imagine you being that comfortable only added to your own performance too.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, we were definitely they planned this way in advance, and I think what credit must go to the management and Jake and everyone that took the time, you know, to really understand first and foremost what will add to that motivation, I suppose, culture, expectation, as a player, as a Springbok, you know, in a foreign country, and where we'd kind of get the best out of the players. So we were slap bang in the middle of Paris, you know, in walking distance of some of the great coffee shops, you know, kind of really in a good spot, the hustle of bustle of Paris, you know. And I think that allowed us to kind of have that break, you know, and to force us to kind of take that time off from the rugby side, and then having when we did have the rugby side going full throttle at 100%, you know, because I feel that we needed that break. And I think the culture around us anyway, as a South African side, would be around a lot about kind of family and kind of different guys have got different motivational aspects to their game. You know, some of them play for their family, some of them play for themselves, some of the guys play for the coaches or all three. And look, we did have some sacrifices. I remember clearly that I think our wives or family or partners, I think only arrived into the second or third game. And we had some kind of limitations around certain aspects, like every team, because, you know, we didn't want to get in one part. They wanted to keep that, you know, distraction limited. But I think that just added again to how they orchestrated that, that we were, I think, two games or three games in. At that stage, we were going, you know, very well. I think we've just come off the English game 36-0. And I think then our wives arrived, our partners arrived. So it gave us that next boost, you know, for having the family with us. Was again, prior to the World Cup, we would have spent a large amount of time away from home anyway, whether it was kind of the games or the BOC games. We were in camp for 4, 5, 6 weeks anyway. So it was great just to spend some downtime with them and have that time and then revitalize, you know, for the week, you know, incoming. So I think it was great, kind of, again, management and organizational skills by the guys, putting us in a place where we can literally walk out to a coffee shop, you know, as I said, see a little bit of Paris, the guys that haven't been there before, and enjoy a little bit of the World Cup fever. You know, I think that was a huge part of our success. You know, that we could have those two sides to it, and kind of then really make that definitive, you know, difference.
Being able to enjoy something as simple as going to a coffee shop, it makes you not just appreciate the competition more, but you're present in that moment. You're seeing fans walking around and having the crack, and they might come over, have a photo, whatever. But like, you are fully present in the moment rather than just thinking, oh, I wish I enjoyed it more, or we're only here to have one job. You know, like, I mean, we're all human, and while you are there to do a job, essentially you want to enjoy doing that too, if that makes sense.
Yeah, there's no doubt, you know, and that adds then again what we spoke to previously about the expectation, you know, the real fans and the fans that were there around you, you know, just seeing green and gold around the hotel, they're knowing where they are, and having them around the place, you know, and seeing that kind of World Cup that, again, we need to celebrate. It only happens once every 4 years. And we know that there are teams in the competition that just kind of put every single inch of their finances or time into just making it to the World Cup, you know? So that's the World Cup and the essence of the World Cup. And we know the world in union, as they always talk about, you know, and for us, our mindset was obviously different. You know, we were going for the, you know, for the title, but I suppose part of that was exactly that human side of taking a few pictures with the fans and allowing that to happen, you know, and not being completely secluded and being kind of in touch with them, which was part of us anyway. So why would that change? You know, we didn't want to move away too much from what we've been doing, you know, from a day-to-day test week and completely change. We wanted to continue what we were doing, you know, and find those little 1%ers around the areas where we could kind of complete, you know, continue to improve. And, you know, even we had some real, I suppose, interesting times where we formed a great relationship with our kind of, I think they're called the Gendarmerie, which is the military side of the police in France. And they used to kind of escort us and, you know, they basically became part of our group, and it was incredible how it happened. And then they took us throughout all the matches, the same group, and literally all the way to the final. And they were basically just as happy as us being French afterwards, and taking us back to the hotel with a trophy in the bus. And yeah, it made that extra kind of, I suppose, a special time, you know, really special.
I imagine the pressure was still building during all this, and that probably by the time the rugby rolled around, it was almost like a release valve to, you know, to start the games versus Samoa and Tonga. I know you were on the bench for them, but I imagine when kickoff came, you know, in that first game, it was a sense of, okay, we're here, we're ready to go.
Yeah, there's no doubt, you know, you are just waiting for that, you know, the expectation again, talking about that, and then building yourself up into a place. What do you expect, you know, putting on the World Cup jersey, you know, branded and ready to go, you know, and seeing that kind of 1995 World Cup badge on your sleeve, you know, really feeling proud about that, you know, and again, you know, having the opportunity to kind of go in. But we knew, under no illusions, you know, as always is, the teams that we came about wanted to knock us off, you know, in any way. And it started with a bang, with Tonga, you know, always a huge physical battle, and led on to obviously England, and then also, and then led on to kind of England and then Tonga, which was again, but I think looking back now, I feel that was just fell into place quite incredibly, you know, quite well, because I felt we got that physical side of being, I suppose, part of our game anyway. And we knew we had to stand up physically against Samoa and Tonga, you know. We hadn't played them much either. So that was another part that we went, you know, wasn't kind of the England or kind of, again, a team of the USA. We hadn't played either, but we knew England well. And especially leading up to the World Cup, we'd played them within I think 6 months, you know, four times. So we knew them well, and we had a little bit of, you know, leading into a World Cup. I don't think it's a definitive kind of confidence, I suppose, part that you can say, right, you've beaten them by 50 points, you know, a couple of months back. But it's I think it's a small part of the mental aspect. You know, we knew what we did against them in South Africa. And I think obviously we'll speak about that obviously a little bit more, but it added to, again, Jake's plan. And I think just the way the games fell in, really, that we'd create that momentum, you know, going into World Cup and knowing that we're going to play them in the pool stages or maybe later on.
Before the competition kicked off, before that first game, were you looking at the pool stages and, you know, thinking to yourself, okay, Tonga, Samoa, USA, England, were you thinking, with no disrespect to the other three teams, but were you looking at England as if to say, okay, that's the one, like that's earmarked well in advance? Or was it a case of every game as it comes and keep just trusting the process?
No, it was definitely a case of every game as it comes, you know. We were definitely respecting the guys, as I said, you know, Samoa and Tonga were just, you know, really added, and they were just, you know, giving us different challenges, because we knew the physical aspect, they'll definitely come with that, you know. And so we had to find a way around that, and definitely taking it game by game. And I think what we could control, whoever we might play, we just wanted to take it game by game and hopefully come out the pool stages out in the top. And then whoever we might play, then relook at that and refocus, you know. That was our plan, and worked out and allowed us to kind of, you know, formulate that kind of process. But yeah, look, I mean, there were some tight times, you know. You look at the last pass against Tonga, you look at the challenges that they posed to us, you know, and these things could have changed. But I think those are little margins in sport at the top, you know, that you kind of make sure that you just get above it, and then hopefully the road works out for you.
Moving on to the England game. You started that England game, and I know it was a massive performance and you nailed England in the end. But while defeating England in that manner was obviously huge for ye as a team and for lifting spirits, I imagine beating England in that manner also lifted the pressure and expectations upon you from your fans.
Yeah, it's a strange one. I mean, I think we came off that field really feeling that, you know, still for me anyway, one of the, I just look at that back of that game, and I think where were we as a team, you know. And I felt that, you know, especially as the game went along defensively, I feel it's probably one of the best performances I've ever been part of now, defensively from a team. You know, you felt like, I suppose, you know, not sounding arrogant, but you just felt such confidence in your defense, you know, that you could really, you know, I suppose almost invited in. We felt in that way, you know. And I think it was definitely a big performance that definitely, you know, added to our kind of momentum in the pool stages, and almost again, I suppose teams not already taking notice would have noticed, okay, you know, kind of nulled England. But within ourselves, again, taking you back, that we needed to keep our feet on the ground, you know. It was a big performance for us and the players, but we knew that the road was still long. This was just part of the kind of you know, road we were going to travel, and that we knew, again, taking it back, that we were looking at it game by game. We had to take the learnings from that and then move it over, and then look at the new kind of team ahead of us. And that was Tonga, which was a tough game, you know.
I imagine after the England game, on a slightly different topic, I know it was a massive performance and expectations were high, but I imagine that it was probably a blessing that social media wasn't around, or it was certainly in its infancy, nowhere near as big as it was today, because, you know, there would just be tweets, there would just be Instagram messages, Facebook messages, whatever, just probably flooded through if that happened today. So I imagine after, you know, nil in England in a big pool game like that, really announcing, okay, we're here, like, I know you were there for a reason, but really, really just enforcing that, that there was no social media probably to add external pressures onto the team environment?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a big aspect of as we see today, you know. I think our belief, though, again, coming back to what we believed kind of in our mantra, kind of believing 47, you know, again, being part of that, those stepping stones. Look, not to say that we had to put in the performances, not to say they were taken for granted, but that was, again, bringing us down to the core values of our 47 being together. We knew, again, what did we need to do? Where did we have to be mentally, you know, to not let down the other 47, you know? Where did we have to take ourselves? You know, where did we kind of have to add to our game? Did we have to kind of think too much of our performance on the English game? No, let's kind of, as I said, keep our feet on the ground, you know, take the positives. Of course, there were, you know, many of them, and enjoy that and enjoy the win for sure. I mean, they don't come along very often, but that was, again, you know, something, you know, we kind of took forward and I think, as you mentioned, rightly so, social media definitely as a way of kind of putting these thoughts in your head, or, you know, obviously on the other side of the coin, you know, with some results that don't go your way. But we were very aware how things can change very quickly. I mean, we were at the opening game of the Argentina French game, you know, and favorites France losing. So we were very aware how quickly things can change, you know.
So heading into that USA game, about 25 minutes in, someone lands in your leg. Did you know immediately you were in trouble, or did you think, you know, this is just a bang?
I knew I was in trouble. I suppose done my MCL before, I knew I was in trouble, you know. And so it was just feeling odd, and I felt, I got up and just didn't feel great at all. I tried a little bit and I ran on it. And then obviously the kind of physios and medical staff came on. So, yeah, obviously a devastating blow. And I felt that, I think there's a picture of me lying on my back and just looking up and knowing, you know, that something was wrong. I mean, I went for a scan and making sure it wasn't my ACL, because it didn't feel, it felt like, again, my MCL, but I wouldn't have known until afterwards, you know. So I knew it was something serious enough anyway. So it was just kind of devastating, really. And something, obviously, you still look back on today, to be honest, kind of how it happened, you know, playing through your mind, to be honest. I'm a little bit like that. But yeah, it's one of those things, eh?
I imagine suffering an injury like that, though, comes back to what you were saying earlier before the competition. You can't be worried about these things because it'll just wreck your head. You know, you have to just go in and kind of think to yourself, that's out of my control, so I can't think about it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, even the way I am, I think in one part, you know, you do feel that you're going to, even before the World Cup, I knew I was part of a special group of players, you know, special group. We had real success in our kind of Super Rugby campaign, the Bulls winning, as I mentioned now, and we had the Sharks being, you know, kind of runners up. So a real core group of players around that, and then surrounded by the other provinces. So special group of players that have been around a long time and done some special things, you know. So already that part of that was just unbelievable, to be part of that squad and to add to that, you know. So knowing, I suppose, in two parts, you know, great guys to be around, and then playing the, you know, great game of rugby for the team you've always wanted to play for, you know. So in one sense, you always, it's at the back of the head, you know, kind of, especially in a competition like the World Cup, to be hopefully going through to those stages, you know, what you don't want to be part of. So when it did happen, you know, 1,000 thoughts go through your head. And look, it is what it was. But, you know, you couldn't think that way. You're playing a contact sport, and it was just on that day, you know, what happened. And it could, and then you look back at, you kind of start reflecting, you know, you think about how fortunate, again, speaking at the beginning of the podcast, landing in Paris, you know, being part of the games that led up to the kind of playoffs and players that hadn't had the chance through injury or through illness, who weren't allowed to kind of even travel. So, you know, you look back and then, and it makes it definitely a little bit more, you know, easier to take. But yeah, it was really, really devastating and a big blow, I suppose, you know.
I know you flew home before the final and you came back for it. And we'll get to the final in just a minute. But flying home, I imagine being left alone with your thoughts for that length of time was very tough.
Yeah, exactly. I actually flew with the guys to Marseille. They were then planning, you know, for the quarterfinals, and actually got on the train on my own. Kind of got on the train, as I said, I think it was from Marseille to Paris, so quite a distance. And a kind of, just thinking about what happened and, you know, a thousand thoughts going through your head, and then the flight back home. And at that stage, my wife wasn't with us then. They came for a few weeks and then gone back, you know. So just wanted to kind of, I suppose, get back and just, you know, kind of get home and then reassess. So, yeah, it was just not easy. And then kind of got away from the game a little bit when I arrived back. We went away for a few days just to get away from the hustle and bustle. I suppose everyone kind of, with the World Cup happening in Paris, everyone would kind of talk about rugby. You just want to get away from it. And then, watching the game, obviously being in contact with the guys and, you know, leading up to the final, where myself and Jean de Villiers and the guys that were injured, you know, flew over, you know, for the final, which was incredible. You know, and just again, to be fortunate enough to be part of that, I suppose. But Lee, I feel that, you know, the whole group and the whole squad thing really came through then again. You know, even though we were in South Africa, I was rehabbing my MCL already, well into my rehab, you know, having, you know, being with the Sharks and thinking about the next, as a pro player, thinking about the next step all the time, you know, thinking about how you can get better. You know, we're already in that mold. And then, had the opportunity then to, you know, to fly, to be part of the squad and be really part of that squad, even at the stadium in the Stade de France, you know, sitting in the stadium and obviously seeing that happen.
During the final, like you said, you were part of that squad. And I read an interview where it said that even at halftime, you were speaking to CJ van der Linde and offering him some advice and stuff. I suppose the first question I have is, what advice did you offer him? And the second advice would be, how important was that in making you feel included in the final, even though, like, you know, you were an injured party in the squad?
Yeah, the advice was just keep doing what you're doing. I suppose, you know, he was doing exceptional, you know, he was playing exceptional game. And CJ was just really, smashing everything in front of him, really. So it was, I think it was more so just, again, having that, we've spent so much time together, you know, and especially obviously sharing the number three jersey together, you know. It was really just the how we used to build each other up and how we used to be there for, kind of, I suppose, in one sense of how we understood the position and what our expectation was. So it was more of that. I wouldn't think I'd be giving CJ any kind of advice, I suppose, in a World Cup final. It was the pressure that, you know, you had to get through. But he was, feeling part, for sure, there was just, you know, I suppose, feeling part of that process, you know, was part of the fact of, again, being in that stadium with them, you know, and being with the subs and being in the change room and, you know, being part of the environment. I mean, as any player, that burning feeling inside of me was just exploding with, you know, wanting to be on the field, obviously. That was tough to kind of hold down. Because you just feel that as a player, that's where you can kind of give of your most. But then you had to turn that on. You had to turn that on its head, and where you could give most of your, where then you could give most of yourself, you know, off the pitch, and kind of that's what you kind of had to take upon yourself. Still being part of that squad, still being part of that belief process, you know. It became reality of what I think Jake and the players are part of that core group of we finally had the trophy in the middle of the change room.
As you said, that became a reality. But at the final whistle, a lot of players say, oh, there was a sense of relief more than joy. But what did you feel?
Yeah, there's no doubt there's a sense of relief, you know. It's such a, you know, kind of the process, I think, and that process, you know, that you live in. And the sense of relief was there's no doubt, you know, it was the pressures and the, I think, the road you traveled, you know. It wasn't just a kind of a 6 week kind of camp. Yeah, we go into the World Cup. The players that had been with us again previously that have got injured, the players that were maybe, you know, out of kind of view for form or whatever the case, or not being selected leading up to that World Cup, you know, under Jake's kind of management group. and you know, everything stage, you know. And I think there were some tight incidents in the final as well. And you know, those margins are so small, you know. I think as we've seen, you know, it was a completely different, it was probably a similar few players change in that world, in that English side. But it's amazing what a final can do, you know. Once you're in the final, it's everything to play for. And I think that was the sense of relief and just part of just letting go, you know. I think you're under this tension and tightness, and you know, you, even though you don't try and kind of you make sure you don't give too much of that, those nerves and those feelings out, you try and just subdue them. I think that was a time where you could just release everything, you know. It was just, you know, enjoy the time, and that falls in line with the relief aspect.
Looking at your own identity after that Rugby World Cup, and I know we can't speak for other players or anything, but just yourself, did you then identify yourself as Brendan, or did you find yourself being identified as BJ, both at the World Cup winning Springbok?
No, I suppose I've always kind of, I think as a Springbok, really, as BJ Botha, really, for first and foremost, you know, as a person, and, you know, kind of as part of the group, lucky enough to be part of the group, and added my time, you know, to that campaign and previously, you know. Not so much until I got overseas, you know, that I even was that used in the media or anything like that. I think, you know, I think that was when it was used, and kind of being in South Africa, you know, I felt that sometimes, you know, the credit and, you know, all that sort of stuff was difficult to put in place. It was difficult, you know, where do you kind of put that? Because I think we just felt that we were kind of doing what we knew we could do well, and it was a process, and we'd won the trophy, and, you know, again, represent your country on the World Cup stage, you know. And I think that attachment of Rugby World Cup winner, you know, is fantastic, but I don't think it's overwhelming to everything else, you know, or overshadowing to everything else. Because again, I think you're just as good as your last game, really, in one sense. I've always been viewed as that, and, you know, I love the expectation, something I've always reveled in, because I think that can either, you know, pick you up, or you've kind of found a way anyway, you know, to make sure you're on your game. But yeah, it's a funny one. I feel that sometimes within myself, you know, you wanted to travel the whole road, especially all the way to the final, and kind of, yeah, it's some mixed emotions, you know, feel like. But again, getting back to the, as we've seen in 2007, as we've seen with 2019, and as it shows with teams, I think, that don't reach the stages they should, you know, they might have some of the, you know, best players in the world from 1 to 15, but one of the main reasons why they don't kick on and go there is because of that, you know, as we know, is that strength and depth, you know, mentally and physically, you know. And I just think that the World Cup is all about that, you know, strength and depth, in players that believe, knowing that they're taking each other's, you know, kind of that understanding, that respect between the players, that you're going to not let down your fellow player next to you and the guy you've just taken, you know, being in the right mindset at any stage, whether you have to come in at 5 minutes in a game, or you're coming in off the bench at the 65, 68 minute, you know, just to replace a guy that's had a good game. You know, where do you see that relationship between that, you know? And I think that's incredibly important, especially in a campaign like a Rugby World Cup, because it does take that squad kind of commitment and that vision.
I know you said there was a relief at the final whistle and having achieved your goal and everything, but ultimately there is a sense of joy as well. And I suppose my question is, where was that sense of joy found? Was it in having achieved everything, or was it reflecting on the preparation that got you to that point?
No, there's no doubt reflecting on the preparation, the sacrifices, you know. You know, I was, you know, kind of away, a lot away from home. And I suppose that time you put in, you know, leading up to the World Cup, the games, and again, being a relatively new, you know, Springbok, where I was in myself and where I was to kind of, you know, giving back to the team. So everything reflecting really on the preparation, you know, the time spent, again, being away from home in certain times and the sacrifice you made around that. But not only that, but when you were at home, you know, I think at the back of your mind was always kind of that kind of precipice that we were heading, and making sure that everything that you were doing during your day, and I suppose not every minute, not every hour, but you had to take those breaks, but everything was adding to that, you know. So reflecting definitely on the preparation. But yeah, I think definitely a big part in that we were adding our kind of name to the trophy as South Africa, as a second, you know, kind of part of the 95 squad, you know, really special group. And you know, we had to understand how special that is. You know, I think sometimes it doesn't hit home at all, really. And even the years after, it hadn't hit home how incredibly special it is to have that happen, you know, and a group of players like that. So, and we are all in contact, you know, today, and, you know, whether it be kind of business or friendship orientated or rugby orientated, you know, it's a real special bond. And I think it goes for any side, I think, that have been to those levels.
My last question for you in regards to the World Cup would be, was being part of that Rugby World Cup winning squad the pinnacle for you, or is there something deeper that you cherish more?
No, I think for me, as I said, I think very much about it was, you know, I suppose pinnacle in the sense of the biggest award in rugby, you know, winning a World Cup, I think. I think that's a team aspect and as I said, I joined the side 2006, knowing where the guys were coming back from 2003, 2004, building up to that level, as I said, players coming and going and adding my bit. You know, but again, I don't want to say as I'll probably look back at that as one of the best moments for sure. But it was definitely, if I think pinnacle, I would have kind of probably one part, you know, pushed myself that I wouldn't go any higher, you know. And looking back, I would think back, you know, I always wanted to keep on pushing. And again, looking back, you know, having your mind on you're only as good as your last game, really, you know, would have then said, well, I've reached my pinnacle, what now, you know? So from a personal perspective, it was unbelievable. And especially the players around us, and knowing that we won't play again together, you know, that team that was there. So the emotional side of that. But yeah, again, it is one of the pinnacles. One of the pinnacles, there's no doubt, because I think it depends how you see that. Because again, there were many aspects to that World Cup campaign, but also leading up to that, and then afterwards, a big part of that. But yeah, it was definitely one of the main highlights. There's no doubt.
And finally, in the aftermath of that World Cup, was it difficult to reset to the next objective, or was it a case of next job up now and the adventure continues?
Yeah, well, I suppose we had to then, you know, kind of come home, and I think that was something that we were really looking forward to, kind of coming home and presenting the cup. And, you know, I think there's YouTube videos or videos out there with masses of amounts of people following us on the buses, and how we were kind of allowed to parade and really feeling proud, you know, to be South African, and how everyone came together. So that took a couple of weeks, and, you know, the guys enjoyed it, really enjoyed it. And again, after that, it was then back to the kind of drawing board, and back to the Sharks, and kind of into that campaign. So yeah, it was definitely something I reveled in and enjoyed at that moment. But for me, it was then afterwards, as I said, next job, I think, as a pro player, that's where you're kind of going, you know?
Well, I think if you win a World Cup, you're really entitled to enjoy a couple of weeks celebrations at home, aren't you?
Yeah, no doubt.
Well, listen, I'd like to say thanks a million for coming on and for just being so open and honest about everything, and for literally just giving us such a good insight into what that 2007 World Cup was like for the Springboks.
No, Jeff, no worries at all. I really enjoyed this, and thanks very much for having me on. It's been incredible. I suppose, you know, it's good to kind of go back and think about the things that happened there. Because as I said before, I think it just really is something that I think sometimes you feel once you've got that medal around your neck, you know, you're kind of there and have done that. But I think when you are really looking deeper and reflect on some of the memories, how many things can have really come together. It really is a massive effort from every single, you know, area of management to players to kind of, as I said, things happening, you know, in your favor. So it is something you kind of look back onto and saying it's just incredible.
Well, best of luck in your coaching when the season kicks off again and when we know everything that's going to happen. But, you know, best of luck with Bowes and everything like that. And I hope it continues to go well for you.
Cheers, Jeff. Thanks very much. I appreciate it.
Well, that's it for me today, folks. Thanks a million for tuning in and listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please feel free to rate and review it wherever it is you listened. Please feel free to share it, as spreading it by word of mouth is the easiest way for the podcast to grow. Thanks very much, and hopefully see you on the next episode.